The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So for those of you who I don't know, my name is Gabe, and I'm subbing for Mark. He's out of town, so sorry. No, I'm just kidding. I like this opportunity. It's really humbling to share my practice on whatever reflections I'm learning in my practice, and then to hear from everyone else. There's so much experience that we all have to share, so we'll have some time at the end for that. So I got back from a 6-week meditation retreat a few weeks ago. I'm happy to be back. I work here as well, so I'm pretty involved at the center. And it's always kind of a setup to do something like go on a meditation retreat, because you have even people who've been practicing for a while, like I have, there can be unconscious expectations or just wishes. Obviously, we do things like come on a Wednesday night to meditate and share our practice because we think it's useful. And in the same way we go on retreats, many of us find that very useful to have a time we put aside just to cultivate the practice. So what I'd like to talk about a little is this, how we hold our motivation in practice, how that can change over time. I think it's a really rich area for exploration for us. Just like in the meditation, where we're checking what is our attitude, what do we think meditation is, and how are we going about it? So really bringing wisdom, our own wisdom, to investigate what we're doing. So I'd like to start with the title of the talk is The Secret Is. So you're in luck. I'm going to tell you the secret of practice. The secret is there is no secret. And this is a little phrase that came to mind at the end of my retreat, and it seemed like a good summary for what I'd learned. And it's actually really useful for me, this reflection that there's no secret. So we can all go home. You already know a lot. We're all already learning a lot in our practice just by, you know, if we all went around the room and just shared one thing we learned or one thing we noticed in our practice just tonight, something that was useful, something that we learned didn't seem to be useful, there'd be a lot. And sometimes we can not value that, or we can think, well, we're just waiting for that good sit where finally something big will happen. But the learning is happening all the time. And I also think this phrase is useful, this reflection, because it shows up if we have any spiritual idealism or hope for transcendence, like finally being above it all. This is kind of what I was alluding to earlier with going on retreat. 6-week retreat, week-long retreat, weekend retreat. Maybe this time, when I come back, I'll finally be that person I've always wanted to be, always loving. Yeah, won't have all these neuroses. I'll just understand really deeply, and we can frame it in the Buddhist language that we're learning. So I'll have a deep insight, but it's still about me. I'll have a deep insight, then I'll come back and I'll be really enlightened, and everyone will notice how enlightened I am, and then I'll be famous. So it's really a setup, and we start where we are because we, on one level, we are beings that probably, if we're here, we probably recognize that the ways that we've been relating in our lives don't seem to work all the time, or maybe there's a lot of suffering in our life that we're recognizing. And so we want to be free. We want to see, does this work? Does this help alleviate suffering? Does this help make my life more manageable, make more sense? So there's nothing wrong with that. That's just our ordinary frame. And then we notice in practice, in meditation practice, that's our laboratory for exploring different ways of relating, different views. So we notice what happens when we try to meditate the way we do most of our other activities or work with a lot of personal effort. I'm going to be with the breath this whole sit. And we see how that turns out when we have a forceful or a harsh attitude. And then we even see, like, why am I even trying to be with the breath? Like, are we just doing it because we have some hope that that it'll do something? So we really want to, as much as we can over time, and this just is a natural, gradual process, start to understand what we're doing, and that the goal, whatever the goal is, has to be reflected in the path. So we're practicing for peace, we might say. Maybe some of us might have that as an aspiration, peace. So how do we get there? We practice peace. Well, that's hard. That was the only meditation instruction, let's just sit here and practice peace. That might be a useful meditation instruction. If the only meditation instruction we get is sit and notice your breath, that can be a useful meditation instruction as well. And they can both have their downsides, so we say both of them. Practice peace. And see what you can learn by cultivating this mindful, continuous, non-judgmental awareness. Yeah, it's kind of just hope, I think. There was something I heard once, that people will open an email, forget the exact details, or just, you know, why people play the lottery, even though the odds are so enormously stacked against them. We have this hope, and we have this, you know, it's a real desire for happiness, but there can also be this sense that maybe we're just not good enough. We're just not smart enough. We haven't figured it out. Or the world's played a mean trick against us, and one day things will line up. So instead of hoping, which we can do, and we can see what that's like, just to hope that tomorrow we'll wake up enlightened, that'd be nice. But this practice and the Buddhist teachings are all about cause and effect. They're not about hoping. They're not about, are you a good person or not? Do you deserve to be happy or not? What is happiness? Is happiness even possible? These philosophical questions. It's about cause and effect and direct investigation and exploration of our own minds. So it's not just cause and effect abstractly, but cause and effect in this moment. How is the way I'm relating affecting how this moment's unfolding for me? And so we're lucky that we have some teachings from wise people who have done this before us over the centuries, have looked at their own minds and hearts. And so they had a few pointers. Like the Buddha said that whenever there's a sense of constriction or tightness in the heart, a sense of being burdened, suffering, stress, that there's an activity of the mind that's happening. You could say clinging, grasping, resisting, being in denial, being distracted, some sort of mental activity. And this is the second noble truth for those of you who've studied some of the teachings of the Buddha. So the second noble truth is the source of suffering is clinging. So that's the secret. So it's not really a secret. It's out there. It's in books. And so our understanding of this deepens over time. At first, it's just maybe this is the first time you're hearing that teaching. And it's just a teaching, it's just information. And you can consider it, well, that kind of makes sense, yeah. I've noticed when I'm, for example, clinging to a view, a certain view, it shouldn't be this cold. I shouldn't live in Minnesota. Why did I move here? It's unacceptable, then there's constriction in the heart and we're suffering. So we can notice this in really ordinary ways. And what's interesting, and this is going back to just the natural unfolding of wisdom instead of me figuring it out, is that we have these insights all the time, over and over in our practice. It's not like you just realize once that the way you're relating is causing suffering. I mean, we've probably all seen that there's certain patterns in our mind that we know don't seem to be helpful, don't seem to be leading to our happiness, to others' happiness. We've seen it. We've maybe seen it many times, and yet there's a lot of momentum to the pattern. And that can be frustrating, and that we can even feel like we're doing something wrong. But it's just a natural process. And just like wisdom is a natural process, these forces of greed, of fear, of anger, of distraction, they have a lot of momentum. And so it's natural. It's not going to change overnight. But every time that we see it clearly with wisdom, and wisdom sees, oh, actually feels, oh, this hurts, wisdom lets go. We don't let go. We can't decide, I'm going to put this down. Our job is to cultivate the conditions that support wisdom to arise, and that's this clear, non-judgmental awareness. Just stable enough, so we settle the mind, maybe with the primary object, with mindfulness of the body, so we feel at least relatively comfortable, safe enough to just settle and let everything present itself. And then we're interested, not with an agenda. It's like science. If you have an agenda in your experiment, then it's going to be filtering your results or the way that you're collecting your data. So we're collecting data, but how often is that what we're doing? Mostly we're trying to fit the data into our views we already have. Or we don't even know there's data, we're just in our views. But there's data. Right now, there's a body, there's a mind, there's emotions, perceptions, thoughts, moods. And they're all causal. They're all natural, arising from previous causes. And then there's the way we're relating to those, the way we're understanding them. Are we taking it personally? Are we trying really hard to figure out what I'm saying? Am I trying really hard to make sense? Are we judging ourselves, judging me? What are we doing? And then to not judge that, or to see if we're judging that. So this is a very different way of being, of relating, and it's unfamiliar. So we need to cultivate the taste for it and cultivate the supporting conditions for it, of relaxation, feeling safe enough, of just recognizing, like we did at the end of the sit, this motivation. Why are we here? Why are we practicing? Why are we interested? Is there this sense of care, this sense of compassion, this sense of wanting to be a little less constricted, a little more free? A teacher I really like, Rebecca Bradshaw, says that we have to acclimate to presence. I really appreciate her teachings. She often really doesn't demonize or put down our neurotic patterns, our defense strategies, the ways we've learned to survive for a lot of us. They're also natural processes. They're also the mind's best attempt at protecting us when we didn't have enough wisdom to see things, really to experience what you're experiencing. So she says things like, reality's intense. Which I Yeah, I appreciate that honesty, that there's a reason. It's not just like we're bad and so we're causing suffering for ourselves and others. We have to cultivate the inner strength, wisdom, and compassion that's able to meet the intense reality we live in the world and in just our own minds and hearts. It's wild. She also likes that word, which I really like. It's wild. It's not neat. I mean, look at just our condition as humans. We don't know what's going to happen next, literally. And that's intense. That's reality. So it's no wonder that.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.